You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Hello, Greenbelters. Just welcome to the Hot House if you haven't been here before. This venue, particularly during the day, has lots of different talks on displaced people, so asylum seekers and refugees, and the other strand that they talk about a lot is climate change. And they talk about those two strands in particular because this venue has been sponsored for the last 4 years by the Pickwell Foundation. And their four directors are here. If you bump into them, ask them more. They're based in North Devon, do some absolutely wonderful work. And if you'd like to find out more, I believe there's a notice board over there with a QR code so you can go up and find out more about what they do. So, as we've just said, lots about climate change, and I'm hoping that you are here to listen to the talk about zero to hero. So, we have, am I right in thinking we have Catherine Pearson, Jesse, and Liz? Now, my hope, actually, on this one is you're going to tell us, perhaps, how we can do this better together and problem solve, especially around businesses. Okay. Would you, Greenbelters, give them a very, very warm welcome?
Thank you, everyone. That's a lovely welcome. I've just discovered that I'm losing my voice a little bit today, so this is a bit unfortunate. So I'm going to try and talk as loudly and as clearly as I can. But as I've been thinking all day, what we really wanted to do is create a bit of a workshop for all of you to get involved in this, rather than say that we have all the answers or that we know more than you do or anything like that. So a big part of this hour is going to be you guys having a little think about some of the questions that either you're all coming with or that we throw out to you. So that will help save my voice a little bit, I hope. We do want to do a little bit of jargon busting and myth blasting around climate change and carbon zero and carbon positive and all of these little words that get floated about. And we want to think about it in terms of business. So what can business and what can you as consumers consider or think about in terms of climate change and making a difference? And we really do want to hear ideas of best practice, if any of you have them in your places of work or have heard of anything, or any ideas that you might have as well. So we want to have quite a collaborative share. So yes, so I'm Catherine. I'm from an organization called Good Makers Society, and I do a lot of work with social enterprises and charities and thinking imaginatively about how we can make a difference in this world. I'm just going to ask these guys to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to ask them a couple of questions, and then I'm going to give you guys a minute to think about a question that you've come with today. Like, why have you actually come to this session? What is it that you would like to find out? Take it away, Jesse.
Hello, my name's Jess. Hey, that's what we like. So I run Lemon and Ginger. We are the UK's largest independent refill shop. So there's a lot of them dotted around the UK. We actually have a stand in the village as well, so you can come and ask us all the questions that you can't ask us here. So I set it up 5.5 years ago with the aim to make being sustainable as accessible and affordable as possible. So my aim was to make sustainability, I wanted to be a role model and to show you that you don't have to be perfect, you just need to make those small differences. So we sell everything from pasta to sugar to rice, herbs and spices, refillable beauty products. So we've got over 3,000 products that are all fully plastic free, sustainable, and most of them you can come and refill. So over the years we've grown and grown and grown. Last year we actually won Best Sustainable Business in England. And then this year we were finalists for Best Cafe, and we've got a fully plant-based and minimal waste cafe. So everything we do with sustainability in our mind, and we also really work and try and involve our community as well. So I believe that you can't really have a good sustainable business if you're not working with your community. So every little step and everything that we do, we're constantly looking at sustainability and community. And that's what I do.
Is that okay? Oh, it is working now. Okay, have you brought your fan club with you, Jesse?
I don't know anyone in this audience. I know quite a few people in this audience.
That's great. Okay, Liz, take it away.
Yeah, so quite different from Jess here. I'm Liz Taylor. I work for a small PLC as their in-house sustainability person. So that means that I try and work from the inside to help them understand what sustainability is and how we can be more sustainable as a business that didn't necessarily start out to do that. So for us, I guess that incorporates our environmental, social and governance, so how we work, how we're run. So I moved into this role 2 years ago and career changed from about 20 years in the charity sector, where it's perhaps much easier to think about the difference that we were making as an organisation. And when I left that role as the pandemic hit, I knew I wanted to do something different. And I knew that I felt really strongly about climate change, the environment, sustainability, and wanted to think about a role that I could apply that more directly. And so that's how I moved into it. I studied social responsibility a long time ago, and I guess when I finished my master's in my 20s, I can remember people saying to me, "Oh, Liz, so which business is doing it really well?" And I just used to be like, "Oh, it depends. That's such a complicated question. And there's so many things that it's really difficult to know from the outside." And I guess that really put me off kind of knowing where I wanted to work or how I wanted to make a difference. So I guess now it kind of comes back to what Jess was saying about there are lots of different ways to be sustainable and to think about it. It's quite lonely on my own in a big organisation sometimes, and so I a year ago decided to study again, and I'm doing a business sustainability specialist master's, which I'm finding really helpful to help think through and to work through some of those issues with my organisation. So that's me, and that's where I am.
Great, thanks Liz, glad you're here. You've got a little fan club as well, haven't you? Yeah, there you are. And at the front, brilliant. Okay, great. All right, some very quick questions. I hope you guys are thinking about the questions that you've come with. Jess, why did you think that starting a business was going to have an impact on climate?
So I think I have to, if I tell you a little bit about how I grew up, I grew up in Uganda. I was schooled in Uganda and I saw a lot of conservation and I actually worked in conservation. And when I came back to England, there was a real separation between people and planet. And I just wanted to recreate that love. And I also didn't want to work for big named companies. So I really looked at how I could make an impact in my hometown. And then I realized there were all of these refill shops around, but they were doing it, a lot of them weren't interesting enough, they weren't exciting enough, they weren't inviting to those that hadn't actually thought about being sustainable before. So I have this real complex that I like to think that I can do quite a lot. And I was like, I could do that and I can make it the best it could be. And that's why I decided to do it, because I just wanted to make it affordable, accessible and easy for people to think about sustainability. People come into our shop not knowing that we are a fully sustainable shop. And then they start to walk around. They maybe grab a coffee, don't realize it's vegan. They grab a coffee, they walk around and they see people doing their refills and they go, oh, it's actually not that difficult. And to make it that accessible and to make people think about it, we have the discussions when people buy coffees, we have the discussions why people buy organic pasta from us, you know, we have the small discussions and then we have the big discussions about net zero and carbon neutral. We kind of have everything and we've created that space. So not only did I want to set up a business, I wanted to create the space where people could talk about it. You don't have to be perfect, you can come in, you don't have to be vegan, you can eat meat and still shop with us. You can buy stuff in single-use plastic and still shop with us, but the point is that you're thinking about it, and the point is that you're changing your habits. And if you're changing your habits, maybe you're going to tell the person next to you, who will then tell the person next to you, and then you're creating this ripple effect, and actually you've made a much bigger impact by just by doing one thing. So I hope that answers your question.
Yep. Thank you. That's great. That is really great. Okay, Liz, I'm going to give you some quick fire things now. This is a little bit about some of the things some people might have come to hear. So what is the difference between carbon zero, net zero, and carbon positive?
Okay, so I guess first of all, there's like carbon footprinting, which we should probably talk about, which is a tool that's been developed actually relatively recently to help companies, help individuals measure the impact that they have on the world around them. It's not perfect. It mirrors financial accounting, where you know, you make decisions as you go with how you're going to treat things. And so two people could create an account for the same thing, and they would probably come up with a different answer. Having done a maths degree, I'm relatively comfortable that there are different ways to answer things. But that's a reality. And part of carbon footprinting is getting better and refining how you're doing it. And that's all part of your learning journey. So that's kind of what that is. And then I think the two, so you said the net zero, carbon neutral.
Carbon zero, net zero.
So
carbon positive.
So carbon neutral is kind of the idea that you're removing as much carbon as you're putting in. So theoretically, I could be carbon neutral, drive a hideous car, and buy an offset for the same amount of carbon, and then that's carbon neutral. I'm making it better by doing something else. Net zero has the same impact in that the net result is zero, but there is a standard, particularly within corporates, around net zero, and the companies need to reduce before. So they have to reduce and have to say how they're going to reduce down. And they're allowed to offset a little bit at the end using legitimate, slightly more verified and legitimate ways. But it would be only a small bit that they couldn't get rid of any other way. And then carbon positive is usually used in lots of different ways, but often it's used to say, oh, well, we've also avoided these emissions because we've created a product that's helping people, and therefore we're having a positive impact. So you've all the terms are used relatively interchangeably, I would say, and it's, you don't necessarily know what someone means by what they've said, I don't think.
So it kind of sounds like then, if somebody says something's carbon zero, it's a bit more of just a marketing term, maybe. They might be using it, and they could be doing that in any way. If they're actually saying something's net zero, they're applying a standard that's out there that you can find out more about.
Particularly if they refer to science-based targets, that would be the sort of verified standard.
So that's how you'd know, okay? And then carbon positive... Again, is it a bit more? It be a bit more marketing than an actual?
I think a bit looser. Yeah,
a bit looser. Okay, so that's something to think about.
There's also a carbon neutral. People can have meet a carbon neutral standard, so they can be. There is a. So you can investigate these things a little bit.
Yeah.
But it. Generally, if I'm reading about a company, I generally think if they're saying they're carbon neutral but not telling me anything about their emissions or how they've got to carbon neutral, then I go, I think you're probably not. Like, or it might not be as meaningful as... But if you're... The more they're telling me, the more I generally believe what they're saying.
That's actually exactly what I was going to say. There are so many websites that... There's so many websites where you buy clothes from, whatever it is, and they say that they're carbon neutral. If they're not actually saying any more information, I really do not believe it. You need that, you need the statistics and you need the measurements, else anyone can just put the, oh, it is actually working, never mind. You need those measurements and you need some sort of proof. I think it's very easy for people just to put those words on a website and for people to just believe it. And I guess that comes into the issue of greenwashing, whether it's on purpose or by accident.
Okay, thanks, guys. So now I want you to have a little think. You've got a minute to just formulate what your question might be. And then I'd like you to get into groups of like three or four just to share that with somebody about what you've come to try and find out in this session. So maybe you've come because you run a business and you want to know more about what sustainability might be. Maybe you've come because you'd like to start a business like Jesse did. Or maybe you've realized that you're a consumer and you do a lot of buying, and how do you really know what it is that you're buying into? So you might have all sorts of questions like that. So 1 minute, and then get into groups of three or four just to share what that question might be. This is great. You're going to have more time to chat either with the people that you've just met or the people that you've come with, because again, you're going to be sharing your ideas and your answers to some of these questions. But I want to get a bit of a feel for the room, okay, and see what we might have come with. So I'm going to read out some things and I want you to put your hands up if this sounds a bit like the question you've come with. So have you come with a bit of headspace? You want to know more about this carbon stuff, get some definitions, get some info, get some stats, etc. You want some more evidence, more information. Put your hands up if that's you. Okay, brilliant. Few, right, great. Heart space. Have you come to be inspired and find out ways to inspire others? Okay, good. Foot space. Do you want more ideas on what you can do as a consumer or a customer of business? Okay, it's all pretty even so far. And then hand space. Do you want to create solutions? And do you need help doing something with the ideas that you have, putting them into action through business? Ooh, a few. Okay, great. Brilliant. Okay, so get back into your groups and then see if you can think of one question you'd like to ask out to the group. So we'll ask it to the audience first and we'll give you a chance to think about any answers that you might have to the question that other people have come with. And then we'll also have a go at sharing any thoughts that we have as well. Okay? Yeah, if we need to. So we'll hear your answers first and then if there's anything different. And then we might try another question and then these guys will answer the question and then you guys can share anything that you think you could add to that. How does that sound as a workshoppy process? Not bad? Okay, let's give it a go. All right, so have a little chat first about the question that you'd like to throw into the room. See if you can agree. Some of you are ready to go. So who's got the first question you'd like to throw out? Got a mic over here.
So I'm interested, how do we know when something is really sustainable? I think fashion, people talk about sustainable fashion. I'm not sure there's such a thing as sustainable fashion. So just, you know, and also, what are we trying to sustain when we're talking about this? Because consumerism doesn't seem like it's sustainable. It's continuing this dirty growth pattern we've got. So two questions, sorry.
That was a bit cheeky, wasn't it? Two questions. All right, well, let's start with number one. So how do we know when something is sustainable? So as consumers, how do we make that choice? How do we inform ourselves? Have you guys got any thoughts on this first? Where do you go?
So one of the things I do is I have a small sideline selling jam. If you're anywhere near Pershore this Monday, come down and say hello.
The plug.
But also, one of the things I can do is, because it's me making it and me picking it, is that I can answer any question people come across. So I would say to people, ask questions, see if the people you're talking to can answer them.
Okay, yeah, so that's great. So you're really involved in the production chain, right? You know all the bits that go along, and so you can be really close to that and really know. But what about some stuff that we're not so close to? Yes.
I was just going to say, picking up on the jam thing, I think that's a great point, because I don't think it's reasonable to expect to know unless you're willing to put in some kind of there are some times when it's really obvious. So like the strawberries come from that field there. It was turned into jam by this lady here and I'm buying it from her, right? That's an easy choice. But anything other than that, I don't think it's reasonable to expect to know. All you can do is a best guess. And we try to get through so much in our modern lives. We spend so little time. Most things for us are commoditized, so unless we have a mindset changed away from commoditization and towards valuing things, I don't think we can expect to reliably make good choices.
Anyone else? Any other thoughts on how you can... Yeah, some chaps over there. You might need to come towards the microphone because I'm not sure it will extend.
So I recently bought some running shoes and they said on them the amount of carbon that was involved in producing them, but I had no idea what that meant. It was a random figure. But I thought if you compare that to maybe food labelling where you get colour coding and stuff, maybe there's a way that businesses could use that on other products.
Yeah, that's really useful, isn't it? That's how we make decisions about the food we buy when we know what's in it, and yeah, it's sort of nutritional value. Something like that would be really helpful. Any other tips for how we can make these decisions on what we buy?
I think we desperately need some proper labelling and regulation from the government, ultimately, don't we? So at the moment, I think it is down to having to do some research, unfortunately, which takes time. And I find myself sometimes buying things and thinking, can I really take the time to do the research? And it's a bit of a pain, but I try to. I would say there are some sources of data out there. So things like Ethical Consumer, where if you're willing to pay, someone's done the research for you and you can read that. And I've found that helpful at times. The other thing to say is I actually do a role quite similar to Liz's role for a slightly smaller company, who are a B Corp. And if you've heard of B Corps, that's a movement of businesses that are trying to do better. I wouldn't say they're all completely sustainable, but they are some of the leaders, and there is a directory of all the B Corp businesses, so you could go and see is there a B Corp business that is making the thing that you're trying to buy, and that'll be another place to go and look.
That's great, thanks for the B Corp suggestion. So I just realised another one of your USPs is that you've done the research, so when we go through the threshold of your shop we can disengage our brain because everything there we just know.
So that was actually something I was going to say is, but then you're relying on those businesses, and I can see that when you're looking at big businesses, it's really difficult to have that element of trust, I guess, if you don't have a face to the business or you don't have someone you can actually talk to. But when customers walk through our door, they know that we have done every ounce of research. Often they see myself and Sophie, our manager, sat on our laptop for hours because we are literally looking at one product to make sure that we can bring it in, and it might take us the whole day to decide. And obviously that's really time consuming, but then we've done all the work for you. So customers come into our shop and they know that we do that. And I think the other element is that we're completely transparent and we have made mistakes, but we tell our customers that. And we were having this discussion before, and I think it's a lot harder for corporate businesses to kind of acknowledge that they make mistakes or tell you that they've made a mistake because they're kind of like more of a faceless business. Whereas we go, look, we kind of mucked up. We bought this. They told us it was this. We brought it in. We realized it wasn't. So we've sent it back. But just so you know, anyone that's bought it, this is what has happened. But obviously for bigger companies, that's quite a difficult thing to do. And this lovely lady, you spoke about sustainability in fashion and something, and like, how can you make it more sustainable? And actually that's again something we do is we run clothes swaps, and we pull in so many people from it. I get a new wardrobe every 2 months and it's incredible because I will just put my clothes back in and so people always get it. And the thing is you can take as much as you like, and it's really, really hard for sustainability in fashion. But if you can give, whether that's fashion or something else, so you've obviously got the ethical consumer to look up sustainability in businesses, if you can have a clothes swap to give your clothes another life, if you can have a food swap to kind of, you know, you don't want this bag of flour, there's apps like Olio, there's Too Good To Go, there are all of these things, but also you need to know about them. And if you don't know about them, then that's what's really difficult. And I think that essentially, yeah, there needs to be a directory of all of these sustainable apps and things that you could go to. And every town is different, every city is different, every borough is different, and yeah, some sort of uniformity would definitely help. Yeah,
great idea. Is it okay if I ask another? Yeah, is there another question out there? Yeah. So is. Oh, okay. Let's go over here. Sorry, let's go over here. It's harder to spot people in the periphery.
Hi, I'm the MD of a big manufacturing company in the automotive sector, and I have to buy quite a lot of raw materials out of Asia. Now, my biggest headache is how do you actually audit the freight coming in on sea freight, because there's some seriously sketchy ships out there, and I've just got no idea what to do.
So audit what bit, the process or...
Freight.
Yeah.
The freight.
Right.
Like the ship to get it around the world.
Yeah. Okay, well, that is a big question. Does anybody in the audience have an idea? I think Liz might have a suggestion, but if anyone in the audience...
To be honest, we had a manufacturing business and we used to buy quite a bit of stuff from Asia ourselves. And the only way we could check was actually to go out ourselves. I mean, there's almost no other option, to be honest. So you can have, I mean, I work in Uganda half the time. I can get as many certificates, PhDs, whatever I like, and I can have them officially put on a website. It's very easy to do that for most businesses if they're unregulated. So the only way to check it out, unfortunately, is the responsibility comes back on the business to go and check out the product, which is very expensive. And that's the problem. It adds costs. And that's, I guess, is the problem for most corporates and for most businesses. You have to... You're not on a level playing field with businesses that are not playing by the same rules. And that,
yes.
And I would say that is one of the biggest issues for consumers and businesses that are buying for other businesses. You almost have to make that decision that you put that above the bottom line. And that's a problem.
Liz, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I was. Am I on? No, I was going to say the same. I don't know if that's feasible for you. I know it's what. Just going back to your question around fashion, I know it's what is having to happen there. Visiting factories, auditing, checking the practice themselves. I don't know much about your industry. Oh, it's the boat it comes on. Oh, yeah, I don't know. But I don't know. I'll have a think about it. Yeah. I wonder if that's then going back to the company who's running the boats and working out what they're doing. I think that's the way I would start.
Look at the logistic company.
And looking at other companies who are also using that company would be another avenue. I'll come and help you. It sounds like fun.
Does sound good? Okay, another question.
Hi, I'm just a consumer, and I do everything I can. Ethical consumer, anyone who hasn't looked at it is really good. It's a good start point. I follow a lot of things there. I've made some painful decisions and ditched Amazon, changed banks, got rid of dairy mostly, shop locally, try to go smaller, ask questions. I feel like I do all the things I can do, but I still see there's a long way to go. So I'm now looking at companies. What are you doing? I want to turn it around and say, what are you doing? The things you're doing is fantastic, but you need to do more. How do you, there needs to be legislation, you need to be going to governments, you need to, and that can't come from consumers because no one listens to us, but they'll start to listen to companies and the corporates, and our corporates are starting to do things, and the smaller companies, and they're big, they're filling up the spaces. So they will be listened to, they will be heard. So I want to know, what, how are you going to change things, not just for what you're doing, which is fantastic and commendable, but for the industry to have to change? How do you stir it up for the big boys to have to follow what you're doing correctly?
Yeah, you go.
So this is where I feel a little bit scared. But I think that, I think we're starting to see some of the movement within my space that creates some of the change. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I think that we've seen in the last 5 years an increase in reporting requirements on companies like the one I work for. And we're suppliers to big, you know, some of the very big banks and all sorts. And what you see then is the pressure that's put on. And what we're starting to see glimmers of is this being a space to compete in, because ultimately, to keep our customers, we need to compete on our, when we talk, if we talk specifically maybe about environmental sustainability, but that's becoming an important place for us to compete. And that's going to hopefully ramp up. Now, it's interesting when you hear people saying, well, you know, customers, as in you and I, consumers, aren't asking, they're not willing to pay, they're not, and whether or not that is true in our sector or not, I'm not sure we know that really yet. But I think the more people are talking, the more pressure we're putting. So the guy who spoke up over there, talking about investments, and, you know, helping. I think the stat he gave me earlier was that 50% of the investments that his company manage are now in a more sustainable portfolio. Now those, that then has a ripple down, because the what they're invested in, they have to be meeting a standard. And what I feel like we might start to see, if we all kind of keep going, is people beginning to work together. I think it's still not super clear, going back to the other question, what we're aiming for, but I think in the environmental sphere it's a bit clearer, you know, there's a crisis. I think sustainability is a journey. We need to get better and better and better. And I agree with you. There's only, you know, it's everyone needing to work together. That would be my view. I feel a degree of hope, and I think that I think that's a place to start.
So one of the things we've often heard about here and probably talked about before is this whole idea of it all being part of a system. And so there isn't really one thing that we can do. And I think part of this conversation here is to think about all the different things that we can do and all the different parts that we can play. And yes, we are consumers and we want businesses to do something different, but we're also voters and we can also write to our MP about these things, as well as choosing what we spend our money on. And we also have neighbours and friends we can talk to and influence them and say, I've just discovered this company actually, and they are really transparent, and I think you should, you know, buy from them. You know, so there's lots of things that we can do actually as consumers
Many of us are employees, and yeah. your company might not sell products that you buy, but we're all, as we project forwards the impact of climate change, people are going to start competing for us and our labour. If we want to work places that are taking this seriously, we have power in all sorts of ways, and we can use that as we want to.
Yeah, great. Okay, we've got a couple more questions.
Just
just to follow on from that, as we are, as well as being employees, if any of you got a pension, you're a shareholder. You own part of these companies. And so go and talk to whoever helps you with your pension. Because we desperately, I work for a financial services company doing a lot of work on how do you even know if your pension is ethical, inverted commas. And the key question really is, what are those companies doing to hold these big corporates to account? Are they speaking to those big corporates with the questions and with the points that you would like them to speak with? And if not, we need that to happen, because that is a very powerful way to hold them to account.
Great, yeah, thank you for that. That's our next question.
Okay. Right. Hi, I'm just curious about how do you create a positive, sustainable culture at work, like within our businesses? I loved, Jess, that sort of idea that you've got this brilliant team of employees who are actually behind us. who are actively engaging customers. But that, you've created that culture. That doesn't just happen. And actually, you are therefore, how do you create that values based culture that has staff who are passionate? And how have you done that? And how can we be doing that in our bigger corporates or bigger businesses? How can we be creating these cultures where, like in my business, I have these values, but not all my staff, not all of our employees do? And how do we create these values-led cultures?
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to hear from Jesse on this one. And then I'd also like to ask that question out to you guys. If you've got any, there've been some good examples in your workplace, or, you know, some things that you've heard that have thought, yeah, that really does make a difference in a workplace.
So it actually all stems down to me working for an awful company before I set up Lemon and Ginger. And I remember going, I'm never gonna be that person that, one, treats my staff like that, and two, acts like that. And then when I set it up, I mean, my whole life is in Lemon and Ginger now. I don't actually do much else at the moment. But when I started it, it was me on my own, and I created this customer loyalty and I created this trust, because actually I needed my customers in order to create the business that I had. And, you know, it's not just like me and them, it's we're in this together. And I think that a lot of companies kind of forget that. Like, you have to work together in order to make an impact, whether that's in sustainability or in something else. If you're not a team and you're not building one another up, then what are you doing? Like, how do you create your friendships and how do you create that incredible relationship with your colleagues if you're not going to just build them up and they're not going to build you up? Thanks, guys. And so everything I've ever done is I've always tried to be this positive role model in what I've done. Customers have come to us with problems, and I've even said, yeah, I'll be brutally honest, I don't know what to do, but this is my recommendation. Let's work through this together. And I think it's all about building it together, and it's never just you being that influence. You need to work with them, and they need to work with you. It's not just in sustainability if you haven't got that base relationship. And I can understand that in big businesses that can be a lot more difficult. So maybe that's where Liz will know a lot better. But yeah, that's basically what I can say. I mean, these guys might actually have more information on it, but I can actually say that most of my team, my best team members, they're all incredible, but my best team members were all customers to start. They all bought positively into the business before actually being hired. And now they're locked in. But that then, the, you know, you had the passion and you had people that not only cared about me, but cared about the business. So yeah, I think it's difficult though, and I can understand that that's really difficult, and you want everyone to think the same and do the same. But I guess if you're not the right, like, you need to be a role model for it. You can say, oh, I'm going to do this. You know, I haven't had a disposable coffee cup in 5 years, and I will literally go and be like, I don't need a coffee. and I'm there dying needing caffeine, because I'll be like, I've said that I'm not ever going to do it, so I will not do it. And therefore people always see that, and they know that everything I say I do, I will stick to. So I guess it is just like keeping those levels and like sticking hard at it. But good luck, you've got this. I believe in you.
Do you want to go, or do you want me to ask it out?
All right, so has anybody got any examples in their workplace of how their values have been put in? Yes, at the back and there. So go there first, and then you at the back. Yeah, because it's just quicker to get the... You might need to come a little bit closer to the mic.
Kind of following on from what Jess was saying, really. So I used to work in quite a corporate, big company, and when I first started thinking about sustainability and waste and things like that, I was quite often laughed at. They don't understand, or they think, well, what's the point? You're just one person. And that can really quite be overwhelming when you're one person in a big office. And I think I was trying to change things too fast, too big, and make all these suggestions. And I think sometimes it's better to positively lead from example, but almost by leading the way, you do it first. So if you go in and someone's like, oh, I really like your outfit, you go, oh great, I got it from a charity shop, or have you heard of Vinted, or you know, oh, that keep cup's really cool, where did you get it from? Or I think things having a story and a background help when you're trying to discuss with people to try new things, try new ways, examples. Or sometimes we get customers coming in like, I've got this really stinky drain, what can I do about it? Or, you know, and I think it really helps. And all of us are the same, we're very passionate about it, we try it at home, we know our products, we use the products. I think that makes a huge difference when people come to us, is we can say, actually, yeah, I've tried that, it really works, or I wouldn't try that one. And I think it, when I used to work in offices, it was very, very hard to break the cycle when there are so many people. I think maybe start smaller with just like your initial team, even if it's showing them like, this is my cup, or I've brought my lunch in. That was a big thing when I used to work in the office. Everyone used to go to the cafe and like buy all their lunch and all their stuff on like disposable plastic forks and trays. And I'd come in with my lunch and just heat it up in the microwave. And they were like, oh, that actually smells good. It's like, yeah, I made it, and it's leftovers, and there's no waste. So I think it's try not to be disheartened when they don't move at first. It's really hard. And sometimes some people aren't willing to change. Right. So I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, and then the lady at the back, please. And then I'd really like to ask if anybody who put their hand up who has an idea for a business that they'd like to start, or they've got a problem that they'd like to create a business around, I'd love you to share your idea for that, if you're willing to.
So we've had exactly this challenge, and we started this way. Hello. Wait, I don't actually know who asked this question. Who asked the question? Hi. So we started out as a very, very tiny business, and we're now 55, and we've had to really think about how we recruit people and induct people. So when someone applies for a job with us, we send them, one of the first things we send them before we invite them to interview, we send them our vision, mission, values, purpose. Like, this is what we are for. This is what we're trying to achieve. We're a B Corp. Thanks for the shout out earlier. And then we interview against some of that, and we have a conversation at interview about vision, values, purpose, all of that, try and check alignment. We're not asking for everyone to believe all the same things that we believe, but they've not got to be horribly misaligned with that. And then, exactly as other people have said, you then live it. So we have a pool of cash available for people. So we set the pool of cash at the start of the year. Everyone who lifts shares to work or gets on public transport or cycles to work gets a share of that pot of cash at the end of the year. We keep records. We've gifted everyone. Someone said about reusable lunchboxes. We've gifted every member of our staff when they arrive as part of their goodie bag. Day one, they get a washable lunchbox, and we go, of course you can go to the cop and get a meal deal, that's fine, but here's this, and if you bring leftovers, here's a microwave, you know, and so it's all of that is setting expectations before anyone's even signed on to work with you, right through day one. This is your role, and part of your job description has a B Corp element. This is part how you fit in with our purpose through to then living it. All of those things are really important. Hope that helps.
I love that. I want to work somewhere where I get a lunchbox on day one. I love it. Liz, do you have any other thoughts on culture change? Just that small thing, culture change.
No, I don't think I'm going to add anything to that. I think that there was I think there are good examples, bad examples, but I think that was a great example of pulling it all the way through.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. So does anybody have a business that they'd like to get off the ground, or an idea for a product or something that they think might be to change the world? Some of you put your hand up earlier. No, you're not so sure. Oh, we got one there.
Shipping company.
Yeah, maybe an ethical shipping company. Yeah, logistics company.
So as the employer of several hundred minimum wage workers, really, really upsets me that they're disenfranchised from cycle to work schemes, which would be a really ethical and cheap way of them getting to work, and particularly like electric bikes. So what would be amazing, and I do not have time for this, is if someone wanted to start a company that would lease sell electric bikes to minimum wage workers. I can't do it, so that would be great. And also you can get electric bike charging points in lockers, so we've got some of them in our factory which we put in, and the people who do have electric bikes find them really useful. But if someone could combine those two things in a business model, you'd be making bank when you approach manufacturers.
Oh, someone's done that. Yeah, do you know the name of the company?
There is actually a national cycle to work scheme that now does encompass a lease option for people who are on minimum wage, so that is an option.
Okay, problem solved. Any other ideas? That was a great one, and we got an answer. Any other thoughts? Was there someone else?
No, I don't think so. I'm just offering it to anyone that hasn't spoken before.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Is there anyone that hasn't spoken yet? Sorry. That has got an idea for a business or a product? No. Yep. Yeah. Great.
Are you able to come forward?
Might sound like I'm being sort of slightly sarcastic, but a actual carbon accounting, how to do it, a company who could actually help set the standards and help companies do it, because currently the information is rubbish, as you have said. And I'm an accountant and I'm asked to do carbon accounting for reporting in the accounts. Absolutely no clue. The baselines are all over the shop. Nobody knows how. If you've got a product, say that's got a life of 100 years, absolutely no idea how to calculate the carbon footprint of that product, of its life in 100 years' time, how it's going to be disposed of, what's going to happen. At the moment, it's just a minefield. So if I could, easily start
a
business.
Small business?
I work big business.
Big business.
Absolutely no idea how to do any of it.
And you're being asked to do it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No idea. And I've been on lots of meetings, lots of courses, lots of big brain things. The tools aren't out there, the information isn't out there, and it's no good. It's just unreliable and it's not affordable. Yeah, so maybe my company will be doing that.
I know, let's have a chat afterwards about some the ways that we've been able to do it and find relatively affordable ways, because when I came into the business, we were paying more than my salary for a shocking carbon footprint. And we found ways to do it in a much more affordable way, and where there's much more confidence in the data. But I can point you towards some people I've found. But I think I totally agree, because it's new expertise, and And so we've got the standard and then everyone's interpreting that. And so either you have to have the confidence in your organisation to make those decisions as you go, like everyone does all the time with financial accounting, or you ask someone to help you, and then, but you don't really want to be paying, you know, huge amounts of money for that. I can send you some information about people I've come across.
Great, thank you. Okay, we've got just 5 minutes or so. This is your opportunity for your last burning questions. If they haven't been covered or asked yet, if you've got something, I came here to find this out and we haven't talked about it yet. This is your chance. Or if you've got any questions in particular for Jess and Liz about their work or what they do. Any more questions? Oh, I got one around the back of the tree, and then someone, I saw movement over here, yes.
It just helps with the feedback of the microphone that works much better in the middle, is what we've found out.
What we're discovering.
Less of a question, more some comments. So I work civil engineering and logistics, sort of. I've worked in material handling and currently just in the last year, like recycling centres and things like that. They're often billing it on the idea of this is taking X number of trucks off the road, which is a saving in diesel fuel towards the companies who work on that. And it's about making, I think, that chain of connections, because if someone doesn't have the value of wanting to lower carbon, but if you say, well, it'll save you money, I know it's not always possible, but, you know, and then on that, logistics, and we've handled waste from different things, and it's bizarre where some of it comes from, and like some of the big wind projects are taking enormous amounts of concrete and then coming out of them are massive wind turbine blades that are unrecyclable, and they're taking rare metals to make all of the like generators and things like that. Then I wonder whether there would be a product similar to what the last commenter said about, like, but instead of, you know, we need to track where everything comes from and get that information on products or whatever, or on the business of this comes from here, which comes from here, because loads of things use cobalt, and I tell you, it all comes from the mines in Congo, which are not exactly clean or ethical. So
it's the whole supply chain thing, yeah. Which actually we started off with Sarah's question was about ethical fashion, and it's... Yeah, so difficult.
It just needs transparency.
Transparency,
there are people who,
yeah.
And the people willing to get it out there, that's really it, I think.
Thank you.
Which I'm not telling you that anything's been solved, and I don't want to be the voice of optimism, you know, blind optimism. But I feel, and carbon accounting is a total nightmare, but the whole point of asking companies to account for their scope 3, so scope 1, scope 2, they're the sort of the things that you'd expect, so your electricity and gas bill effectively as a business, and then your scope 3 is all the emissions in your supply chain, which are obviously almost impossible to know, particularly if you don't know your supply chain very well. And so what we're starting to see is pressure coming from the investors, coming from customers, for companies to be calculating their scope 3, which quite frankly starts as a big guess, because they're saying, I spend this much money on these things and roughly that is this much carbon. But as if companies are going to make that net zero target that we talked about at the start, which my company is in the process of working out what that would look like, you have to be reducing that scope 3. And so that is, I do feel a small amount of hope that there is a mechanism for change, because if my employer is taking responsibility for things that quite frankly they can't control through anything other than supply chain relationships, and if you think that that's one corporate and then you've got many, many more, and that is where I think we start to see a system move. And as an individual looking at carbon accounting, or whoever that was who came forwards, it's very complicated. But I think it might help us. Let's hope, people, because we need something to help.
Thanks, Liz. Okay, one quick question, and then we're gonna end. So hopefully the answer will be a quick one.
Well, back with talking about accounting and auditing, my company have just gone through their ISO 9000, and I know there's whole schemes out there, and there's actual accreditation, and you have to meet the standards, and you have to be audited regularly to say that you're ISO. With carbon neutral, carbon zero, net zero, whatever, are there organisations and companies out there that can offer accreditation?
Yeah, so there's an ISO for, so you can do the ISO 14001, which is an environmental management system, where they would, at standard, where they would look at your, they would look at your own targets, they'd look at how you're tracking. It's not net zero specifically, but the idea would be that you would be on that track. You could then, so net zero, you can get accredited by SBTi, and they have a whole corporate standard that you have to meet, and it's done through audit and through verifying your data. There's also a carbon neutral, I feel like it's past 260 or something, which again you have to provide data for. So there's various ways that you can judge a company or demonstrate your own your own credentials. Yeah.
Okay, great. I hope that was helpful. Yeah, great. Okay. Right, with no more questions. I just wanted to say a quick thank you for all of your contributions and where you're all coming from. And it's just super encouraging to hear that you're all trying to work on something in your own spaces. Jessie's just got a little ray of hope that she'd like to share with us.
Always. So going back to your comment where you were saying how you're doing all of the right things, but it's so difficult to know if you are doing the right things and like where to keep going, and then challenging us. I want to throw just like a couple of numbers at you to show that your like one purchase is going to make that much of an impact. So given that I've been in business for 5.5 years and there's a lot of us out there, in my first 2 years of business, I was tiny. In my first 2 years of business, we saved 6.4 tons of single-use period products from landfill. We have over 3,000 products. So your one purchase, like your multiple purchases with us and with other businesses, genuinely make that much of a difference. So you may buy, and I'm sorry to say period products, but it's just the statistic is incredible. But like that one purchase makes that much of a difference. We've saved hundreds of thousands of plastic washing up bottles just by you refilling that same washing up bottle for the last 3 years. So yes, okay, there's so much negativity and it's so easy to see what you're missing and what you're not doing right. But that one purchase or that one change, that one item of clothing that you've swapped instead of bought, genuinely is making that much of a difference. And it might be really hard to see, but we're here counting the numbers and seeing it. And maybe we need to share it more often, and we need to shout about it more often so that you can really see that you're doing the right thing. But genuinely, every single thing that you do, we call it the ripple effect. You do one thing and it makes a wave. The phrase is, you don't need one person doing something perfectly. You need millions of people doing it imperfectly. And that is a phrase that we throw at people all the time. It's better to be imperfect and aiming in the right direction than for one person to be perfect and us all not to be doing the right thing. So I really hope that helps you leave on a positive mindset. Genuinely, everything you do makes such a difference.
Thanks, Jess. That's brilliant. Well, thanks all for coming. And I hope you're off to do some exciting things now and listen to some music and have some nice food. Do you want to close for us?
I mean, that couldn't be more inspiring to just inspire us to actually take the next step and do the next thing. Greenbelt, can we give an absolute massive round of applause and say thank you very much?
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.